Ayo, and here we go. Once again, we are down a member, but don't worry, he'll be joining us a little bit later. This is WTC, We Talk Comics, episode 74, WTC Goes Maverick. Tonight, we have the cream of the crop, Brett on my left side, and I'm going to ask you, what is your favorite Claude character?
My favorite Claude character? Well, that's kind of crazy. Wow, I don't even think of Claude characters very often. I'm going to say the Superior Spider-Man.
All right. And Keith, what is your favorite weapon, non-traditional superhero weapon?
Non-traditional superhero weapon.
Yes.
Blunt
object. Let's clarify. I want a blunt object.
Thor's hammer, I'm going to have to go with.
Thor's hammer? Okay. I was hoping for a mace, or maybe a ball and chain. Because I'd have to go with a ball and chain for a Hawkman. That's a pretty cool, badass weapon. But let's get on to the cast. Our first feature, as always, is Cub Reporter K with the news. And the news is always brought to you by the best comic book news website on the net, Comicosity.
All right, well, it's a big, cramped news week. So we'll fly through and we'll comment as things come up. Batman Incorporated is being canceled or ended at issue 13, which is at the end of Grant Morrison's run.
Are they killing Batman? Issue.
Yes, they'll of course be killing all of Batman Inc. in that issue.
One could only hope, frankly.
It turns out that Lucius Fox has a lot of children. There'll be one in every country. Also in the DC solicits for July, the start of Trinity War. Trinity War, which has been talked about as the first big event, looks like they're narrowing its focus a bit. Trinity War has been announced as 6 issues over the 3 Justice League books, these being Justice League, Justice League of America, and Justice League Dark. So it's the July issues and the August issues.
I wonder if they're sort of tightening the reins because they've lost so many major story arcs with Hawkman and Grifter and, well, basically anything that bordered on Wildstorm at all. I wonder if they're sort of paring that part of the story out.
Well, I am happy to see them staying out of the event spiral that Marvel finds themselves in over and over. DC's had a success with doing these kind of more contained events. So this is three Justice League titles. The solicits make it sound like probably a couple of the Dark books will tie in with this, possibly Constantine, really probably Phantom Stranger and Pandora. Trinity War is focused on these three teams, Pandora, Question, and Phantom Stranger.
Well, I'm interested in it, although it's unfortunate because it means that I'll have to read Justice League of America. But
really, the real hard spot for me is Justice League Dark, actually.
Oh, Jeff Lemire's doing amazing work on that book.
See, I have interest in that book, even though I haven't been reading it. But Justice League of America, after reading the first 2 issues, I thought it was so terribly written that I really didn't have much interest.
Well, maybe we'll take a look at this in come July and see what they've been building to with Pandora from issue 1, page 4 or something of New 52. Pandora's been...
What panel, Keith? Come on, what panel?
Oh, I don't remember. I remember she was in the stands watching Cyborg play football. The return of the new 100 of the 700 free comics will be this week. I hope you got your name in on Comixology. They will be starting the Marvel number 1 promo again in some kind of managed fashion, a few people at a time. And by the time you hear this podcast, you may have already gotten your email offering you some free comics. How did you, Chris, you missed the episode where we were talking about these. Did you end up with any Marvel number ones from this offer?
I got them all, and figure it was probably me that crashed the site because I had 5 books left to download.
You
at the time it went down.
You downloaded 695 comics?
Actually, I was deleting them as they came down. I just wanted them on my account so I could download them for free later.
That's all right. Chris, part of the problem. I think Brett and I were somewhere around a third to a half of the book, so we'll have another shot at.
I didn't have time for any of that crap. It's just add the basket.
See, now that's what happened. I mean, there was 3 days that you could have done that.
The weekend, what? I was busy. I had things to do. I had comic books to read. Some bastard gave me 700 of them.
I'm never going to get caught up.
Well, I think, the biggest problem for me was just that I would have absolutely loved to have cherry-picked, but the cherry-picking wasn't working very well, so add to basket became the only thing that worked.
Yeah, once it started faltering, I panicked, too, and it just started hitting add all.
Yeah.
But I was doing it for the browser, so it actually wasn't as...
And then you wind up with Fantastic Four comics in Spanish, and you're just like, archive.
I was actually logged on...
Quattro. Yeah.
I was logged on 2 systems, actually, to tell you the truth.
And that's why it all went wrong.
All right. Yeah, Chris eating up valuable bandwidth.
All right, what else we got? There were announcements about casting for Captain America 2. I'm going to skip a lot of them because you can just go look those up. The big news, though, Batroc the Leaper is going to be in Captain America 2.
I am so happy.
Some MMA guy. I don't care. I don't care. Gerard Depardieu could play this character. It's Batroc the Leaper. I'm just thrilled.
Oh, man, I want the mustache. I want the purple suit. I want the yellow hat. I want this stupid costume. I want the stupid accent, the offensive French accent. I don't want a real accent. I want, as translated by Stan Lee, a French accent in this character in the movie.
But how can you not care that it's Georges St. Pierre as a Canadian? I mean, I thought that that's just what you were supposed to do.
To be 100% honest, I had to look him up. I had no idea who that was.
That's awesome.
Once I saw the name, like, oh, wait, that has been mentioned to me. Yes, I have heard his name. But yes, I did have to look him up. All right, let's moving on with the giant news. We've got DC's next digital animated film. Animated film will be The Flashpoint Paradox, which is based on the Flashpoint crossover from 2011.
Which one is that one following?
The previous one was the second half of Dark Knight Returns. So this one will be out in July.
Yeah, they haven't done that many, I guess, in a while.
No, isn't there a Superman one happening in between that?
Is the Superman one out by then? There is a Superman one because it's... maybe it is in between those.
Yeah, okay. Because they announced the Flashpoint quite a long time ago, but I guess we have a full title with Flashpoint Paradox now.
They hadn't actually. It had gotten leaked when one of the actors said, I just recorded something called Flashpoint. So they hadn't actually officially announced it. And speaking of leaks, Collected Editions, blog, hello, Kat. Collected Editions, which is a friend of the show. It's a site that I use quite frequently for keeping track of all of the trade paperbacks and collections. They found a curious thing when they were going through early solicits for advances on books and collections for months and months down the road, and what they think they've discovered is what the DC September event will be. They found a listing for the DC New 52 Villains Omnibus. In September 2013, Evil took over as every title in the DC Universe published special new number ones featuring the villains of the DC Universe collected here in a massive hardcover collection.
That's my kind of event, man. I love villains. I want to see them at the forefront. I have all these covers in my head right now. I'm excited now.
This is, I'm excited because it means that we get to do another, we get to piss Mo off by doing another full episode on reviewing every single number one that that comes out for it. So that's going to be fantastic. Yep.
We're committing now, right now. The three of us have decided we are doing all the number ones for this crossover.
Shall we do it again like we did for the zeros, where we just did it as a one episode?
Oh, I love that.
That might fun. Be fun.
That was great. All right, let's do that.
Mo might actually have to read a comic book.
Let's not go too far.
Well, for the number ones, we did four episodes. For the number zeros, we did one episode. So we have to do all 50-odd of them in, like, a quarter of an episode. If we're gonna keep that consistent. Four of us need to review 50-odd books in
Your review is one word.
25 minutes, done. All right, and let's wrap this up with just some sales numbers from our friends at the Comic Chronicles. March's number one title was Guardians of the Galaxy at over 200,000 copies estimated sales. Next was Age of Ultron, Batman, Wolverine, another Age of Ultron, Justice League, and another Age of Ultron.
Sweet.
And we got a lot of... there's a lot of... repeated names in this in the top 20, including three issues of Superior Spider-Man and a lot of X-Books. So with March, Marvel did retake the quite soundly the percentage of the market. Important to note, though, that the Marvel's share of the pie is bigger in March, but it's a bigger pie. So DC did not really drop anything. The market just grew.
That's a great thing.
That is pretty good news. And I want to point out one specific number on this. The first issue of Constantine came in around 30-odd thousand copies. 37,005, according to these estimates. Not nearly as high as a lot of number ones have been from DC. It puts it at 62 for the month. It is about three times what Hellblazer was selling.
Well, I think it's going to be more interesting. Like, the Hellblazer numbers, I mean, as long as you didn't get them from 300, but I think it'll be more interesting to see by the time we hit issue 3, 4, 5, and Constantine is leveled out as to where it actually sells, if it just kind of actually almost even drops below Hellblazer sales, which wouldn't necessarily surprise me.
I got no.
And that's the news.
Alrighty. The topic tonight is, well, this is mine, and earlier this month we decided that we're going to pick out some topics ahead of time, and we all submitted 5 or 6 or 10 choices, and I have to say, this one was mine, and I was fairly lazy. I was just trying to fill out a list. I came up with Mavericks. I thought it might be kind of interesting to talk about characters such as Wolverine. None of us really have a huge love of Wolverine himself, but he did create a mold of a type of character that doesn't really belong on a team, but is always there. We have multiple examples, such as Deadpool, the Red Hulk, Elektra. Basically, if you are on the new Thunderbolts team, and you have no idea how much it pains me to call that team a Thunderbolts team, that is the definition of a Maverick. And our buddy Mo has just joined us. Hey, Mo.
Well, my cat's freaking.
I'm sorry, he hasn't joined us. He hasn't turned on his mic.
Anything happened in the news?
Nope.
Yeah, let me just go back and catch you up.
You'll have to listen to the episode to get that.
I had so much to say about the big news items of the day, and so many email threads that were talking about multiple penises that I was going to...
You know what? We did miss one story, Keith.
We missed several stories, actually. We
missed the big one this week.
We did. We skipped two, and
you
actually
might
there was...
even call it the Mobius.
I didn't want to cover it until Mo was on the show. I did not skip it. I was going to do it at the end.
Mobius effect?
And we're going back to the news with Cub Reporter K, brought to you by Comic Osti, the best comic news website on the net. Cub Reporter K, what else do you have for us tonight?
Sad news in the comic world. Carmine Infantino, veteran creator, co-creator of Batgirl, co-creator of the gold, of the Silver Age Flash, Barry Allen, passed away last week. And Mo, I know that that his era of Flash is a run that you actually brought it to my attention. The Trial of the Flash was one.
I didn't even realize he had passed. I missed that news. He redefined how speed is drawn. Considering what an important element in today's comic books it is, his legacy is kind of cemented through that. So that's very sad news, Keith.
Not to mention, he ran DC for quite a few years there.
That's Julius Schwartz.
No.
He's executive editor, I believe. He was one of the higher-ups there for quite a while.
He was one of the higher-ups, yeah.
He did good work.
Yeah. Really an artist. One of the best. And anything else, Keith?
Well, we were going back and forth on whether we wanted to talk about the saga of the saga, Kerfuffle.
Well, I think we have to mention it. Just because we have the greatest email thread, and it gives me an excuse to read it from beginning to end.
You mean a Twitter thread, or...?
Same thing.
Mo gets all of his tweets.
I got on
email to him,
because of course the computer's trying
more
to...
more efficient.
Well, I do, but anyways. But yeah, tweets, whatever. My tweet thread. This is why you should be following all of us on Twitter. This will give a good example. But yeah, the saga of the saga. Please, go ahead.
All right, well, by the time you hear this, it'll start to be old news. I'm sure that even 1-2% of the people that have called Apple horrible names this week will have recanted. Saga number 12 was temporarily going to be unavailable from the Comixology app on the iPad because of the Apple Store. And then it turned out it wasn't the Apple Store at all. It was Comixology guessing that the Apple Store would have had a problem with it and not putting it there until they checked. So overthinking, over-guessing, the comic, as far as I understand it, has now appeared on the iPad app. It was always available in the comic.
And what was it they assumed would be the problem?
There are two small images in the book. I mean, you can zoom in and make them bigger, I suppose. There are two small images in the book on pages 1 and 2, so it's not a spoiler. One of the characters in Saga has a TV for a head. In these first two panels, the images that are shown on the TV for a head are graphic images of male-to-male sex. Well, actually, in the second image, male-male-male-male-to-male sex.
Oh, the human centipede.
No, it's four penises. And
four?
And some stuff happening. I don't know why after I said four penises that I had to really tone down the
terms there.
It's a bukkake scene.
that is quite graphic.
It's,
I find out Fiona Staples a little hotter even though now.
So what actually happened? Unfortunately, Brian K. Vaughan misunderstood.
Not that I know what a bukkake is.
Well, you all have the internet. It was. You only know the term because I'm sure that Chris used it when he did his review of the Justice League Triple X porn parody.
I never did it, and I never will.
I'm familiar. All right, let's get to the important news of the day. So this started a great email conversation.
Still
or Twitter conversation.
Still
yes. Awesome. Whatever, Twitter, email. This is why you want to follow us. I'm Mo_WeTalk. We got at Cub Reporter K over there. We got Brett_WeTalk. We got Chris_WeTalk. One of these things is not like the others. One of these things does not belong. Of course, that would be Chris.
Mm-hmm.
He spells his with small capitals. Anyways, so we're there we are. And Matt Centauri Griffin, our good friend at Photocub there, talks about how it's not homophobia, it's just disorganization. And I said maybe it's actually, and then people talked about Black Kiss and how that was banned, and I said, yeah, but Black Kiss was banned because it sucks. And he said, well, yes, and Matt said, of course it sucks. That's why I don't even care. Nobody cares. It's too many penises, even for me. Which brought a question for Keith that was what, Keith?
If Black Kiss was too many penises, that implies that there's a right number of penises. So what actually is that?
Wow, I would have really enjoyed that if I read it on Keith Twitter.
It was an odd day.
I know, it's hilarious. For sure. Keith's like, it leads naturally to the question, how many is just the right number of penises? And my next tweet was, actually more importantly, how many penises does it take to screw in a light bulb? And our good friend Willis Bryan comes back and says, 4, don't ask how I know. And I said, I don't want to know why you know, but I would like to see the pictures. But anyways, Matt Centauri Griffin agrees that it is 4. Griffith, not Griffin. I've been saying Griffin the whole time, haven't I?
Yep.
It's like a drinking game now.
We would be Matt Centauri wasted.
That photo, that's the important thing. So anyways, this is the type of hilarity that has WeTalk Comics Twitter topics and trends, which was a former show that we're probably doing someday again.
And I want to issue a correction. There's only 3 penises in that second.
There's only 3 penises. They couldn't even screw in a light bulb. Those lazy brains. Have I heard the show for you guys yet?
Yep.
Awesome.
Bad rock.
Okay. Does everyone awesome. Agree? Is it pronounced Batrock, the Leaper? That I always pronounce it Batrock.
I would say experience? Batrock.
Sorry.
Oh, you guys think about George St. Pierre?
Say you want
George
B A and then.
About Ken?
Yeah, that's what we were talking about. Yeah, anyone listening at home, you can now
George
yell
Pierre, Canada's own.
Yeah, we covered this already.
So Brett, Batrock.
Batrock? No, I would say Batrock.
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 George St. Pierre. But not Batrock.
George Rush St. Pierre, USA champion.
Batrock.
He's going to play Batrock.
I'm enunciating for clarity. I'm not saying that I would actually pause in the middle of the word.
Well, no, of course not.
I'm pausing for effect.
You're putting
clarify
it's just the emphasis and where you're putting it, whether you're putting it on the A or the T.
So anyways,
Rock.
George Rush St. No, anyway.
And that continues to be the news.
All right, let's get back to Maverick.
Join us later for the third Mavericks segment of the news.
What's going on?
I've explained the topic. Mavericks, characters that really before Wolverine didn't exist, and after, every team had to have one. I mean, we have Ripclaw. We have the reinvention of Hawkman as one of these Maverick characters that don't really belong on the team. We have Wolverine, of course. Would you like to do this?
No, seriously, I'm asking you a goddamn question. Hawkman or Hawkeye?
Hawkman.
Because you said Hawkman. Because I consider Hawkeye to have been a far more of a reinvention of a Maverick than Hawkman.
Probably now. But I'm referring to Hawkman, especially when he rejoined the Justice League as not a leader, or Justice Society, rather, as not a leader, but as a more violent character.
Okay. I thought you had gotten the names confused. It's happened before.
Nope.
That's all.
And I will say that I'm surprised that you said Ripclaw, because I would actually consider Grifter more Grifter. Of the character from Wildcats.
You know what? I was just adding the claws in there, but you're absolutely right. But I think Ripclaw actually does qualify.
Well, every character had...
Marvel has always done this a little...
Every team that we saw has had to have one character of every sub-archetype, and Maverick became an archetype. Just like strong guy, fast guy, and whatever. So, yeah.
Yeah, so I thought we could discuss some of our favorite Mavericks. And quite frankly, I don't know what any of you guys feel about Deadpool. He has like 10 titles most months, and yet we never seem to really truly get into the character.
Well, that's because I wouldn't consider him a Maverick.
90% of those titles suck.
Yeah, and I wouldn't consider him a Maverick anyways.
I think one of the things, Chris, is that there is kind of a bit of a difference in that, because Deadpool is more of a wild card character. He's the kind of guy that as a general rule, he doesn't fit on a team. Whereas a Maverick, like Captain America, has on occasion been a Maverick character, but he's never been a wild card character. Whereas True. Deadpool well, is that's... entirely that.
Okay, we're defining this. We're narrowing down. That's a good thing.
So what's Wolverine then? Is he not a wild card?
Not anymore.
I mean, he's been on a team for eons.
I don't even know if he's a Maverick anymore. His character has changed so much.
I don't think he is anymore.
He's a Maverick in
not anymore.
One out of three books. I mean, like, as we were saying last week, it's a character that is very poor editorial control on that character. He's all over the place. In some books, he's a Maverick.
Which book did you say that he is?
Whichever one that he had the... Some people just need killing line in just a couple of weeks ago. I don't know which one that was.
I'm probably Wolverine Max. I
mean, no, it wasn't Max. It was one of the team books.
But that's it, though. I mean, it changes every time. As a general rule, I mean, I've said before, I'm not a huge Wolverine fan. And when I go back to it, I realize I'm not a huge fan personally of the Mavericks, just because I tend to go for a more pure heroic character. And the evolution of the kind of the Mavericks also leads it to the evolution of the Vigilantes, which as a general rule seems to me like a lot of what we have now, and a lot less of the, like I said before, kind of the more heroic characters. So I can't say that necessarily, you know. I mean, I think one or two is necessary, but the idea that it's an archetype that you need to have, I'm personally not a big fan of that.
I think Batman works best when he's on the Justice League as that rogue character.
His best interaction that I've read lately of Batman with any other character is in Injustice. And in Injustice, he's certainly not a Maverick.
But he is the rogue character.
No,
rogue versus Superman. Yeah.
No, he's the voice of reason.
He's the dissenting character, I would
and
say.
And I think Batman dissenting, yes, but not the rogue character. And again, I think that's kind of the dissenting character is again a different thing. And I think that's where Batman works best in a team book. But he still, because as a dissenting character, he can still show leadership roles. It's tough to me to see a Maverick show leadership, though. I guess obviously that's part of the evolution of Wolverine.
Well, then, you know, Guy Gardner from the Justice League International era, would that be? He's certainly a character that almost walked out every second issue. Was you know, constantly undermining the team.
I think he would be
go ahead, Chris.
I think he'd be an excellent example, and I think he plays that role a lot of time in the Green Lantern Corps. Occasionally, they have him as a rogue leader, a leader of a subgroup. But on a whole, he is the voice that speaks out when no one else will.
Well, again, what's a Maverick? I mean, are we talking... A wild card is a character that will do anything. You can't trust, almost. He'll do anything. A Maverick is a character that simply will do what he thinks is best regardless, because he believes more in himself. He doesn't trust others. Is that a Maverick? So what is this exactly? We're trying to define it more. So what is that next level of definition?
Well, I think in some cases a Maverick is a guy who would rather just, who as a general rule would rather work on his own and doesn't necessarily care about the system or anything like that. Whereas I think Guy Gardner has been written as both. Like, Guy Gardner has been written, I think in the earlier Justice League issues, Guy Gardner was almost a wild card because you didn't know what he was going to do. It was funny.
Well, there's a difference, though. Well, that's the thing, though. At some point, he wasn't written, I don't know, as necessarily a maverick or a wild card. He was just a dick.
There is that. Right? Mm-hmm. No question.
I think a lot of the time that a maverick will come off as a dick. He doesn't care if he's liked.
Like Wolverine has at times.
Yeah. One of my favorite incarnations, and this isn't in the comic books, this is in the short-lived or one season of Wolverine and the X-Men animated series, where Wolverine and Cyclops actually traded places. Wolverine was forced with leadership of the team, Scott, due to the loss of Jean Grey, went a little crazy.
Really?
I thought that was a really
awesome Jean Grey. Dynamic. Crazy. Interesting. They should write that into the comics.
No, that never happens. No, I think Chris is making an interesting point, though. Is that, you know, but I guess so, maybe I'm having a little trouble defining, again, wild card, maverick, anti-hero? Well, I mean, what's that? Because, I mean, certainly many times I've thought of Wolverine as an anti-hero. On the other hand, I also think of the Punisher is an anti-hero, and those two have some similarities, but some distinct differences that makes one more, less, his soul isn't quite as black all the time.
Is
the best way to put it.
I think the defining characteristic is you'd never, no sane person would put Punisher on a team.
Chris really just
unless
wants to.
Unless it's a plot point. If he's on the team as someone who does not belong on the team, and that is something that they address within the story, it will make one of the best books on the shelf today, if and that were to happen.
But of course, like Thunderbolts? In Chris's world, it hasn't happened, so the point is moot. But
so going back to the idea of a maverick, I think of a great maverick that I loved and a character who to me fit as a maverick, and there was more than one. I go back to the Justice League or Justice League Unlimited cartoon series. Green Arrow was a maverick. Question was a maverick, and that's it. In that they were the guys who would not go along with the rest of the group, just because it was the easiest thing. Sometimes they'd stand up and say the hard thing, not caring, like you say, what anybody thought about them. As if they believe that they would stand up for what they believe is right, regardless. And also just don't like to be told what to do. So Green Arrow, I thought, was a great example in that cartoon series of a maverick. And sometimes in the comic book, in The Question, I think, is another one that really worked well as a maverick type character in that series. Great series.
Actually, James, I don't know if you ever read this, but James Robinson's run on Justice League right before New 52 was phenomenal. You'd really like it. A lot of Green Arrow, Green Lantern fighting or negotiating stuff that was one of the worst points when they announced the New 52 for me, that they weren't going in that direction with the JLA.
So does the character, Green Arrow character, is he the perfect example of a maverick?
If you go back to example.
Okay, to me that defines what a maverick is, then. More so than Wolverine, probably. Because, I mean, we say Wolverine was the first, but, I mean, I guess he was. I guess the Wolverine that showed up before the Denny O'Neil, Neil Adams run on... But even that was with Green Arrow and Green Lantern, even that was a maverick run, right?
Yeah.
Is Jason Todd the maverick over in the Batman universe?
I think that's fair. I think he's, you know, when we get into these big events, when we got into Death of the Family, he was certainly the one that got drawn in. He didn't want to be there. No one else was actually particularly happy that he was there either. And, you know, that's been the relationship for the past couple of years and in the Bat family, is that it's been interesting to see Jason get dragged into Death of the Family and Night of the Owls, because he doesn't want to be there. He purposely doesn't stay in Gotham, so that he has to be really yanked back in. And you know, he bails as soon as he can, does his job, and then gets out.
He does it because it's an obligation, not because it's what he would choose to do if he had to.
Mm-hmm.
So who else are some of your favorites then, guys?
I actually think that Daredevil works in that regard, because he's a guy who's never joined a team. And in fact, people have offered many times, and certainly when Bendis wrote him, he was more of a maverick. So
wasn't he in the Avengers for a little while there?
No, he was offered. He was in the first adventure.
Okay.
And then they offered him a position, and he turned Captain America down cold. One of the greatest scenes ever, because I mean, you have Daredevil screwing up and telling Captain America Peter Parker's really Spider-Man, and then you have him just saying, "No, I don't want to be an Avenger. I'm not going out into space. That stuff's crazy, man. You guys probably stir up more shit out there than you fix. I'm just taking care of Hell's Kitchen." I just love that. I love that. That defines for me who Daredevil is.
But again, does that make him a maverick, or does that make him just more of an individual? I mean, is that more, you know, he desires autonomy for himself. Does that make him a maverick? Does he stand up against the system?
I think the fact that he gets along with everybody, yet does his own thing, makes him a maverick.
See, I'm saying that's it. If he gets along with everybody, he does his own thing, but he gets along with everybody, then he's probably not a maverick.
He's not seeking their approval, rather.
I don't know. I think you're cutting things a bit fine, Molly. Like, wild card maverick and an individual, if I plug those into, you know, to a Word document, they probably come up as synonyms of each other. So I'm not sure.
Yes.
You need to get a razor blade out to break those into categories.
I don't know. I guess it's my own personal feeling on. I never thought of Daredevil. Because Daredevil may not join a team, but he'll team up with somebody. Same thing was with Spider-Man. For years, Spider-Man wouldn't join the Avengers and go, "Oh, I'm not really a team player." Meanwhile, he had 125 issues of Marvel Team-Up. You know?
Yes, but that...
and it was just like...
That's less to do with his character and more to do with the fact that he sold books, you know?
Well, but it had to also do with the... Like, he'll team up with anybody. He just won't regularly join a team. I mean, I you know...
Well, and I think he's had more crossovers than Wolverine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's probably true.
I think there's more in the fact that I even think that Spider-Man kind of got ruined by joining the Avengers.
I think the same.
Yeah, I kind of felt that too, actually.
I think the same Daredevil.
He got ruined by joining the Avengers?
Yep.
When did he do that?
I don't know. He has an Avengers ID card in the Mark Waid run, though. So at some point he joined him.
You know, somebody to me that was redefined into being a maverick that I liked the redefining to me, I considered him a maverick, was Black Panther. I think he was kind of redefined into being a maverick eventually. I think Namor has always been a guy who's a maverick you can look at. I think the DC has tried very hard to turn Aquaman into Namor and make him a maverick.
Thank God that Geoff Johns is fixing that.
Is he?
I think he is. He's turning Aquaman back into Aquaman rather than Namor.
I hope so. I hope so, because that has been something I think is just definitely... Anytime they want to turn somebody and give him more of an edge, they turn him into a maverick. He talked about the Hawkman. Like I said, I mean, I thought when you had... I think you had a typo on it. Me and Brett both were talking to each other thinking you must have meant Hawkeye, because like I say, he was kind of... He was the team leader on West Coast Avengers, and nowadays he's more of a maverick character, so I kind of, you know, thought of him that way. But
But,
yeah, no, I was going with Hawkman when they reintroduced him as the Savage Hawkman.
Yeah, I see that now. Yeah. I see that now.
I was trying to come up with a DC example because DC has never done too many of these characters. This is always a Marvel area, an area Marvel excels at.
Well, anytime they want to turn somebody and give them more of an edge, you make them that Maverick character, right?
Mm-hmm.
Make them a little anti-establishment. Let's go right to reviews.
Good idea.
Because, Keith, we are...
Here I come to save the day!
Saving you from bad comics.
That's right. We call our reviews section, because where we talk comics, we views. Because Brett was clever when he came up with that.
That's right.
Thanks, Brett.
We do everything.
And Chris to this day hates the name.
Actually, I've warmed to it, actually.
Well, what books are we reviewing, guys?
All right, I'll start us out with G.I. Joe, The Cobra Files. I read this book 2 days ago, actually, from an advanced reading copy. I don't actually remember what happened in the story at all anymore. And I'm not concussed. So there's something there, but I have been reading all of the G.I. Joe books since the call it relaunch, call it whatever you will, but and I was really quite excited about the G.I. Joe number one by Fred Van Lent, and I thought that it was pretty good. And then I read the Chuck Dixon Special Missions, and I thought, well, maybe that adds something. Maybe it doesn't. And then I read issue 2 of G.I. Joe, and I thought, oh, this is getting worse and worse. And then I read The Cobra Files, and I feel like it's the rotten cherry on top of what is quickly becoming a rotten, you know, section of my comic book love. that doesn't really work at all. Rotten cherry on top of an equally rotten sundae, perhaps. But
there's never been such thing.
No, but at any rate, I wasn't a huge fan of the Cobra Files. I am quickly losing interest with the entire G.I. Joe section from IDW, and it pains me to say that because I am such a fan of G.I. Joe, but it's pretty disappointing.
Alrighty, G.I. Joe, The Cobra Files. I was kind of confused by this book. I actually found a lot of stuff that happened in it really intriguing. But for number one, this left a lot to figure out. My main protagonist, I don't remember from her from my old G.I. Joe figures.
Because she's not there.
Okay, that would be the reason I don't remember her. I felt like there was a story that happened immediately before this. I actually went looking for 0 or a 0.1 to explain what the hell was happening. But that I did like everything that was going on. I just was a little confused by who is this and why is one of the what I remember as the Cobra twins seemingly working for G.I. Joe. I had no idea.
I assume if you read the rest of the IDW run, then you would pretty much know that.
But this has a number one on it. they should. I don't like to make it too fine of a point of this because I realize that books tie into each other, but they should have made some effort to catch me up. One paragraph, blah blah blah, would have really helped me out on this one. I'm failing the book, but I am a little intrigued, Keith.
You know, you open up this book, and on the second page, there's the credits are at the top, and then there's this gigantic empty space where you could have put any information that would have helped me understand where I'm coming into this book. As a story, I enjoyed it. Art-wise, I actually enjoyed it. If the art style fits with, things like The Activity and some of the Nathan Edmondson stuff,
And even Winter Soldier. So it has that kind of that spy-ish thing that is developing into an art style. I dug all that. I did spend a lot of the time trying to parse this with what I knew of G.I. Joe, even knowing it's a reboot. Again, trying to figure out how these characters fit together. Overall, I was interested. If someone handed me a couple of earlier volumes and I actually knew where this was coming from, I might want to continue. So, I mean, quality-wise, I like the book. I don't think I'll continue because I feel like I have to go back some before this would really mean a lot to me. Nope.
It's written by Mike Costa and art by Antonio Fuso. This is a book. See, it's not that it's a really a bad book, as you guys have said before. The problem with this is it's just not my G.I. Joe. And I don't want a G.I. Joe that's kind of grounded in reality. I want a G.I. Joe that's just kind of cool and crazy, and the characters are a little bit over the top, and the characters are you know, it's okay to have the stereotype and whatever here. This to me is very much, this is a really good book if it wasn't G.I. Joe. But as a G.I. Joe, for me, it's an utter fail.
And it's a pretty terrible jump on point.
I saw G.I. Joe 2 in the theater.
And how was that?
I had fun.
I hated it.
Well, that's okay.
Well, I bet
although, you I wish I could have taken your review and just pretended I said it. I think you summed that up really well, Keith.
I don't remember what I said.
It's okay. We won't go back.
But I have the question for you, because one hated it and one liked it. It is, though, over the top. It's about the quality, right? But as far as like the characterizations and the style, whatever,
I would say it's less over the top, the second film. I think that very much the second film feels like the early comic books. The first film felt like the later comic books.
Okay.
And that was exactly my problem with it. I really liked the first one, and this new film was way too small.
I own the first G.I. Joe movie, and I still wouldn't say that I really liked the first film. Wow.
I can't believe that you own it.
You betcha, wow. On Blu-ray.
Wow.
That Storm Shadow Snake Eyes fight, that's the whole movie for me. There's a couple of bits I like. It's a movie of bits. But Storm Shadow and Snake Eyes fight, I don't know what you want.
It makes me cry every time I see a part of it.
Yeah, but you know what? Storm Shadow Snake Eye fighting is cool. Like I say, this book isn't cool enough. It's too real to be cool. Brett, give us another book.
All right, well, let's jump out of the frying pan and into the fire with Kiss Solo number 1, the Gene Simmons book. Another fine example of Kiss in a comic book where, they just jam in song titles and just write crap and put Gene Simmons demon makeup all over it. Yeah, it's horrible. It's just a nasty... Oh, man, why did they keep... Has Kiss ever done a good comic? I don't know that they have. Sure, I own the 40-pound Kiss, you know, compendium collection, but I don't think any of them are good.
You just don't have for aesthetics, though. No.
Yes, pretty much.
Yep. I have to agree with you. My review of this book is as fine of quality as any other piece of Kiss merchandise that Gene Simmons has approved.
Isn't that the check?
Yeah, this is flying the same flag that we've seen before.
Keith, that's
your whole review, Chris?
That's my whole review.
Fantastic.
That's his whole review. That does it.
Written by Chris Royale, art by Angel Medina. I haven't seen Angel Medina in ages. Angel's style has changed a bit. It's kind of a clean Tex Sierra style now. Layout's very similar to Tex Sierra's Ghost Rider stuff, and that may be some of the inspiration for the art in this book. The art is the only reason to look at this book. There's some fun stuff. There's some explosions. If you page through this really fast and don't read any of the dialogue under any circumstances, you might actually get an okay experience out of this. That's your best. That's your only chance, though.
So perhaps it works better as a flipbook?
Yeah, I think fast is better.
Flames.
There's flames. If you wanted to cut some pages of this up, stick them up on your wall of the basement that you live in with your next your Kiss action figures.
And your Iron Cross or whatever.
Mo.
I liked it.
Please tell me that you're lying.
No, I'm not.
Did you read this after you suffered a head injury?
I did, actually. Maybe it's because I was concussed, but here's the thing. This is the Ed Wood of comic books. This is so bad. This is Attack of the Killer Tomatoes for me. I mean, I'm reading this going, this is so bad it's good. I mean, I was laughing. It was so horrible and over the top. I when it's over, I'm like, I really enjoyed that because it's just ridiculous. Like, it was so much fun because it was ridiculous. They're throwing in the jamming. I'm like, the guy writing this, I don't know if he's a Kiss fan or not, but he certainly knows the titles of the songs. He's jamming them in. And then you got Kiss, this demon character doesn't speak anything like Gene Simmons or a demon, actually. I'm not sure. I mean, this dialogue is so bad. It's just so bad. I was laughing at it the whole way because it was so bad. So I liked it, but I wouldn't say it's good. But
I hope not.
I really enjoyed myself.
I will say Angel Medina has had a long relationship with Kiss.
Oh,
and
yeah.
he was involved with one of the best Kiss comic book series of all time, Kiss Psycho Circus. It's not saying much. It's still Kiss merchandise. But rather than pay what's the cover price on this book? I have no idea.
IDW, it's about
$17.99. Rather than pay real money for it, dive in the quarter bins and look for that one. If you need a Kiss comic book, although that has never happened to me.
Hey, Brett.
I've never said I need that.
You're going through again here, Brett, but it'll be you to go first. But first I'm going to ask you, Chris, or Brett, in just a few words. Kiss meets the Phantom of the Park. What's your review of that television movie from the 70s?
Greatest thing ever.
Because it's so bad it's good, right?
Yeah, well, because that... in that case, it's terrible, but I love it.
Exactly.
And I think it's...
This had that feel for me.
Yeah, okay, you're on a desert island. You have a choice of two movies. Detroit Rock City or Phantom of the Park. Which one do you take with you?
Ooh,
I have a choice of two. yeah.
Wait. Do both of them have audio commentary? Because this could tip.
The audio commentary for Detroit Rock City is so great because it had nothing to do with the movie. It was just some phone interview they tacked over top of it. It had nothing to do with anything going on. It was just insane.
But if you did have four original members of Kiss doing one for a Phantom of the Park, then I'd probably be in for that one.
Yeah.
But as far as the movies go, I still prefer Detroit Rock City.
Well, it has the scene where that guy goes to beat up...
Tongue cam.
All right, Brett, next book.
Okay, next book. I will choose Colonize number 1 from IDW, another book from Chris Riel. This one I had a better feeling for than I did the Kiss one, but... Aliens versus zombies. I mean, you got aliens pretty damn quick, and zombies pretty damn quick after that. But I think it just took too long for me to read it. I think that aliens versus zombies should be one of those lightning fast reads that occurs in like 2 minutes with lots of Kiss solo action going on. But it felt like a little bit longer than that to me, and so it didn't really jibe for me. But I mean, it wasn't a bad book, but it wasn't my favorite.
I should be your target audience for this book.
You totally should be.
I mean, zombies versus aliens. Then they tried to... I didn't like the book though, because they tried to jam in some semblance of a story, and an ugly one at that. I found all the characters pretty cynical. I didn't get any laughs whatsoever. I by the end of the 22 pages, I actually was a little bit depressed. That's not what I want about with a book with both zombies and aliens. Even the art seemed a little bit depressed. It was just sort of dark, muted tones, and I didn't feel any joy in the comic book. So I'm giving this one a big fail.
All right. Well, this is Chris Royale, art by Drew Moss, and covers by Dave Stim and John Byrne. For these covers, the 1980s called, they said, "You're awesome." As far as the book goes, I aliens on the first page, zombies on the fourth page, rednecks on the sixth page. The rednecks is where it goes wrong. I don't know whether these characters were intended to be a bit of a send-up of Walking Dead. It's some kind of redneck survivalist group. All I could think is that the book had stalled so that they could include story. And maybe a bit more Mars Attacks and a little less Walking Dead, this book might have worked for me. I kind of like the art. I thought the aliens had a neat look to them. The overall concept I liked. But yeah, it's trying a bit to be too much like other things and not enough like itself. So, will not be continuing.
I liked it.
I knew it. I knew it was coming.
So the big complaint everybody has on this is, man, this had a lot of story. When did that become a bad thing?
Well, if the story's stupid and it doesn't fit in the book, then I consider it a problem.
Well, the story certainly fits in the book. It fits the art very well. The art, I think, was really, really strong. It has a kind of a cartoony look. It lets the aliens look very relatable to me and very, very, I enjoyed that. I like the fact these, basically what you have here is you have aliens coming down, they're kind of trapped on this Earth, and so they're looking forward to, since they're trapped here anyways, to meeting their very first ever humans, and they come with good intentions, and when they pull it up to the spaceship, it turns out to be a zombie, so they run off their ship, which then crashes, and they run into a group of rednecks, some who are good and some who are bad, and there was some survivalists, but they were in there for a very, very short time. Setting up for something later on down the road. It was more about the one character who has kind of taken over the role for his father as running the major business in town, and therefore being the most important person in town, not being sure if he has the ability to run it, and now he's thrust in this leadership role. So there's a lot of good story. There's a lot of good characterization. I think the dialogue is nice and crisp. The art fits it. I really enjoyed the book, and I'm all zombied out. I've said that before. I'm so sick of zombies, so I was not ready to like this. And I looked at zombies versus aliens and thought, Jesus, not again. Because it just doesn't hit me. But I think it was well done. So I'm intrigued enough to probably come back to another one. Brett.
All right. Well, I'll go with... we'll go over to Marvel and we'll hit some Ultron number 1 AU. And having been a fan and still being a fan of the Runaways, I actually do kind of have a concept of what's going on with this character and who the character is. It's not to say that I love the book by any stretch of the imagination. I think the problem is that it seems rushed and it seems a little bit tacked on. And I think that's kind of the problem that I'm having with Age of Ultron so far. I've only read a couple of the issues, so I'm nowhere near into it or anything like that. But it's Age of Ultron so far has just seemed really very, shoehorned into the Marvel Universe. And this, I would be much happier if this book didn't even have anything to do with Age of Ultron per se, if it was just listed, as a character piece. So as a character piece, I like it. As a crossover, I don't really like it.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there. I really enjoyed the book, but it was just a nice postscript to the Runaways. I kind of wondered where this character had been. He's not in Avengers Arena, where everybody else from that title seems to have popped up. I kind of wondered about him. It's nice to see he's around, but as far as it tying into a crossover. I don't think it's going anywhere. I'll read them because I have a relationship with the character, but beyond that, would I recommend this book to a new reader as a jumping on point or anything else? Probably not. If you're not into the character, I wouldn't bother going out of my way. If you're reading Age of Ultron and want more, maybe. But I can't strongly endorse it, so. Yeah, sorry. I can't recommend it.
I like this one. I have gone back and reread Age of Ultron up to number 4, number 5 sitting on my tablet right now. This is a great opportunity, actually, to thank one of our listeners, Reese Marino, who is a comic book colorist, up and coming, listens to our show while he's working on the comics, which is awesome. I love that. And totally. He was nice enough to give me the digital code for the one issue of Age of Ultron I didn't have. So I did just sit down and read all 4 of them before I read this. And you don't need it to be a jump-on point. It's a one-shot. It is self-contained. I had never encountered this character before. I got enough out of the book to tell me who he was to enjoy the context of the story. If it was, an ongoing or a limited series, it might not have been enough, but it was enough for me to understand what needed to happen in this particular story. I enjoyed this idea of him being caught in his father's war. I thought that was a neat angle. And, as far as it goes, I think it's an enjoyable little offshoot of Age of Ultron.
Yeah, it's written by Catherine Immonen, I believe. Immonen?
Yep.
Is that pronounced correctly? Does anybody recall who did the art on it? Amilcar
Pina?
Pina? Is that correctly? I think it is a very well-written, very well-drawn book. I've never read a single Runaways, and I've never encountered this character before in my life. And I'm not reading Age of Ultron. Because I've been really turned off by what little I have read of that and how it's gone, so I'm completely away from it. And yet I still managed to enjoy this. I completely got the character, his history, his personality, his angst or conflicts. Totally got it. I think it's a really good character piece. If this was an ongoing series with this character, I'd be back. If it continues to be, if it was something going on with Age of Ultron, because I'm not into that, I wouldn't be back. But I think this is a really well done story, and really well done. And it's really ironic because the two people who have never before encountered the character say they really enjoyed it and felt it was a great jump on point. And Chris, who's familiar with the character, said he wouldn't recommend it as that. So I think that's kind of interesting to see, is kind of the different take on it from people with different angles. Maybe coming at it with different expectations. So, interesting. Brett, go ahead.
All right, well, let's wrap it up with Theremin from Monkey Brain Comics by a friend of the show, Kurt Pierce.
Art by Dalton Rose. And let's not forget Letters by Ryan Ferrier.
That's right, last but not least.
Designed by Dylan Todd.
Excellent. Well, this is pretty much exactly what I expected out of Kurt. It's got its wacky, and it's got its interesting. But I will say that I am a real fan of Kurt's writing. I think that he is a very good writer, and I think he's got a lot of potential. And this is, for me, a really interesting and engaging book. The art style is kind of kooky and kind of neat, and so for me, I was extra happy to drop my 99 cents and pick this one up on Comixology.
I'm thinking about creating a new account on Comixology so I can buy this one twice. I really don't want to give a glowing review to. I mean, these guys are friends of the show. They were at the Comic Book Summit. Two of the three creative people involved in this. I would like to offer some creative criticism. I can't. You had me at wallpaper, people. I loved everything about this. I mean, it has some Invisibles, like mythology going on there. I'm not really sure what's going on. You got time travel, kooky, fun stuff. I got up after this little comic book and did a little dance, and for 99 cents, I can't ask for more. If you buy one comic book, this is the one you should buy. I loved it.
Well, Kurt was nice enough to send us a preview copy of a preview PDF of this about a week or so ago, and so that we could be sure to have it reviewed before the show. I read it again, bought it on Comixology today so that I could read it a third time. I just love this book. I laugh. He's got great dialogue. The wallpaper people were hilarious. There's some really snarky, sarcastic stuff in the inner monologue. The art style is it suits the book. It is it's not the cleanest art style. Coloring is really great on this book though. I really, really enjoyed this, and it was interesting. I read this right after the third time I read this. I should say was right after I finally finished. The Inventor, which is a story about Tesla, so kind of a similar time period that Theremin and Tesla were around in, a few years difference. So thematically, the two seem to have a bit of similar feel. So that was a personal experience. I'll provide more of the fourth and fifth time that I read this book. Mo?
Kurt is an extremely bright guy. And anybody who reads this book can tell what an intelligent man this is. Very, very smart. Unfortunately, sometimes when you're very, very smart, you lose track of the storytelling. I feel like this could have used an editor. I think there's a lot of really great ideas here. I think that it probably about two-thirds, three-quarters of the way it meanders a bit, loses its way before coming back in right at the end. I think that the dialogue is very strong and it's a very smart idea. I think it's a little bit of, unfortunately, the potential is a little bit unrealized simply from the fact that Kurt could have used an editor here. Kurt's going to give us great things. He's going to do great things in the comic book industry. I have no doubt about that. He has a lot of talent, and he's very, very bright. And this is just kind of part of the learning curve when you're getting a young creator creating his own thing. And this is not necessarily something that is easily marketable. So even the name, the title, is not necessarily very marketable, and even the style of story, but it suits his personality. And I hope that he can kind of be like Curtis Weeb, another friend of the show, who kind of doesn't know or care about superheroes at all, but is able to find and create his own stories and use his talent to make a strong living in the comic book world. And I think he's... Kurt Pierce is probably kind of along those lines too, but I think that this is not quite the book that it could have been.
The Theremin Meets Manhattan Project. I want that crossover.
All right, Mo, let's roll us out.
Ooh, the Theremin versus Spider-Man. I'd buy.
I'd like the Theremin versus Spider-Pig.
Spider-Ham?
Spectacular Spider-Ham?
Yeah.
No,
I will not buy Kiss Meets the Theremin.
No, Spider-Pig from the Simpsons movie. But anyways, was a Spider-Pig, wasn't he?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, here comes the Spider-Pig. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Anyways, okay, so last night I have this dream, this crazy dream. In the middle of all of a sudden I have this dream. And keep in mind, I was got a concussion on Sunday, so that might be it. But all of a sudden in my dream, I'm going over to my parents' place for dinner. And there I am, I'm heading over. And I get over there, and they tell me, oh, your sister just opened a comic book shop. Now, my sister's never in her life read a comic book. Well, no, she read a couple issues of Bone, thanks to me, and enjoyed it. But never read comic books. And she's opened a comic book shop, and I was so pissed. And then I found out she's using their money. So then I go over to see it, and it's a place called Comics Legends. She bought a Comics Legends. There used to be a Comics Legends here in Calgary, and she bought that. Except for now it's like the size of like an island. It's like this huge store, and it's got like a coffee shop in there and this little place selling hockey cards. And I'm walking through going, well, she's doing this wrong. Look, she's got books from 1993 still on the shelf. She's never going to sell these at this at regular cover price. I got to go fix this for her. And she's got like autographed books. She's got a book autographed by Riley Rossmo, where he had a Gladiator foil cover and then his autograph and 65 bucks. And then all the other books that were autographed were Razor, the character Razor, who was from the early 90s, autographed. And they were selling them all for 50 bucks. And they were autographed from like 15 years ago, and they couldn't sell them for that price. They weren't lowering them. And I was so pissed at her for doing everything wrong. So I get on my bike. I literally got on a bike in this. And I rode over to Brett's house. And because I gotten on the phone with Brett, we got to fix a comic book store. And here's Brett's line. Brett goes, I'm into fixing a comic book store. So I get to his house, and I'm bitching about my sister. And I say, we got to go fix this. And Brett would go, I'm into fixing a comic book store. Brett, my sister's going to do it wrong. She's going to ruin all my parents' money. I'm in for fixing a comic book store. This was the craziest dream of all time. So I had to throw that in there. Comic book store dream. Other than that, Mo_WeTalk. Reach us at comics@wetalkpodcast.com. If you have any emails or questions or comments or thoughts or opinions or story subjects or topics for a show or whatever, you want to tell me that I need another concussion. Comics Podcast Network are our friends. Comicosity Rules. Comic Book Therapy, another good site. Let's go to Keith because Brett's going to finish this. Let's go to Keith.
All right. Well, you can follow me on Twitter, Cub Reporter K. I think that for at least for now, until Saga number 13 comes out, I am done talking about comic book penises. So feel free to follow me now.
On air.
I have started into my massive reread of Cerebus, which includes all tie-in storylines. I actually found every short story that Sim ever wrote too, reading it all in chronological order. I am about a third of the way through Church and State 1, which is about 60-odd issues in. So that'll be several months as I dig through this. And
does this have anything to do with 900 Things?
No, but it is the biggest pile of trades on the shelf that was on my reread pile. So as I thin out. I just want to say we will be attending the... Three of the four of us will be attending the Calgary Comic Book Comic and Entertainment Expo coming up in just a couple of weeks. We will be sure to tweet information. Maybe we'll even see if we can get a meetup going at some point over the weekend so that if you are a fan who's in the Calgary area hanging out at the show, that you can come say hi to us. Autographs are very affordable. Christopher.
Chris, before you do, I just want to say, because I was hard on those guys a couple weeks ago, they've done a nice job filling out the expo as we near the date here.
Yeah, very excited that Grace Randolph's going to be here for the show.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
I'm Chris, _WeTalk on Twitter, and I will end with a little bit of advice to Mo, or future advice, no, never give a bone to your sister.
A bone?
Never mind.
Wow, we should have just ended the show right there. But one thing that I will say is I'm up for fixing a comic book store.
Yeah.
Mo,
said I was like struck, that was the only thing you said.
I was struck by the voice that Mo was giving you, though. Because it was really... It wasn't so much the helpful breath. It was more... It was more Lenny of Mice and Men. Tell me again about the comic store, Mo.
Have you met my friend George? Yes. Fantastic. Awesome. All right. Well, just because, anyways, I'll quickly talk about myself first, anyways, that's Brett_WeTalk on Twitter, Brett.
Hey,
of course.
Hey, Brett, before we do, no comic book attraction this month.
Right.
Returning soon. Chris needed to take a break. Okay, go ahead.
Fair enough. All right. Well, I recommend checking out the Access All Ages column on Twitter that I do. Or on Comicosity. Wow, on Twitter. I tweet about it, though, on occasion. So... whatever. But next up, I had a chance to talk with Shane Turgeon of the Edmonton Expo, and he's the guy who originally did the Edmonton comic and game and toy festival, and then he actually talked to Kendrix Fung and kind of started the Edmonton show as a bigger deal. And so that one last year became a large show, and this year I'm sure it will be equally, in fact, if not larger. And so I had a chance to sit down with him on the phone for a few minutes, so we're just putting that in right here. So we're going to talk some more about the Calgary Comic and Entertainment Expo. Just relax, sit back, relax, and listen to Brett and Shane.
OUT.
Hi, this is Brett with We Talk Podcasts, and I am here with Shane Turgeon, founder of the Edmonton Collectible Toy and Comic Show, which is now the Edmonton Expo. He's also the owner of the Shades of Grey Tattoo Shop. How are you doing today, Shane?
Good, how are you?
Not too bad.
That's good.
So tell me, how did you get involved with the Calgary Expo?
I got involved with the Calgary Expo basically through running the Edmonton Collectible Toy and Comic Show for so many years. A lot of people don't really know it, but when Kendrick started the Calgary Expo, we kind of both worked hand in hand behind the scenes to help each other shows out in various aspects. And over the years, we developed a really good relationship. And when I, kind of decided that it was time for the Edmonton Collectible Toy and Comic Show to grow into something new, it was the only logical decision to work with the Calgary Expo, who had established themselves as such a significant powerhouse in the convention scene, to work with them to create our Edmonton Expo. So in doing that, I'm now part of the overall Expo organization, working on both shows.
Excellent. So you're coming down to Calgary then for the Expo?
Absolutely. I'll be down there to basically work for the Expo, as well as Shades of Grey will be down there with all three of our artists will be down tattooing as well.
Sweet. So how exciting is it then that the Expo sold out this year?
It's incredibly exciting. I mean, it's such a testament to not only to the show itself, but to the kind of how, like, the, nerd culture has just become so significant and so predominant in mainstream society. You know, the fact that so many people from around the world are coming to Calgary for this convention, is it really speaks volume to the significance of the event.
I think I saw that there was a significant group from out of Calgary that's coming into Calgary for the Expo.
Yeah, and I mean, like, we were selling tickets to people in Seattle, New Jersey, all kinds of different places yesterday, just, you know, through our shop. And years ago, it used to be that, the conventions, the big conventions were the ones in San Diego, or, I always went to the big Star Wars conventions that were held every, 2 to 3 years that were put on by Lucasfilm, and I would have to travel to go to have a convention experience like that. So for those of us who live in Alberta now, or Western Canada, to have an event of that magnitude so close in our own backyard, it's fantastic. And the fact that so many people want to travel from all over the world to come see what we're doing, just, it really kind of shows the impact of our brand. So we're very, very proud of that.
So then this would be part of the reason that how Calgary can afford to bring in so many of the top line guests.
For sure. I mean, the fact that the show is consistently selling out on so many levels. But that's also coupled with the fact that, Kendrick has a very solid reputation with the actors and their agents and stuff like that. And we're known for putting on a show that treats its guests very well. You know, the unfortunate thing is in around the world, in years of various conventions, not a lot of convention promoters, are the best at treating their guests really well. And that's the one thing about Kendrick, is he's gone above and beyond in making sure that his guests are well taken care of. So that word of that travels, and that reputation, really stands out for people who are looking to do shows. They hear that this is a great show to do, and they want to be a part of it too.
Will you be employing the same strategies that Calgary uses then for the Edmonton Expo going forward?
Well, the nice thing about with Edmonton is that we can kind of learn from mistakes, but there's growing pains with every year of a convention, and things that you may not have done as well as you should have or didn't anticipate. When the growth of the Calgary convention, we can anticipate that for our growth in Edmonton. We have a phenomenal venue with the Northlands Expo Center. They've been fantastic to work with. There's tons of space, and it allows us to kind of take what we've learned from Calgary, apply it to Edmonton, and then try new things that should even make it an even better event. So
now, in the case of the Calgary Expo this year, there's a great amount of actual media guest this time, whereas I think there's a little bit less in the comic side. So is that something right. that Edmonton will be kind of, could go the opposite way on, or is that just this year that's the way it turned out? Because I know that it's occurring at the same date as Chicago's C2E2 convention.
Right, and that's the thing, you know, like with other conventions happening around the same time, you know, it's a lot easier for a lot of creator guests to get to places like Chicago, New York, and we do have, that is, you know, something that we have to kind of work around with us. We, of course, would love to have more creator guests than what Calgary has, but it's going to be a matter of who's available, what else is going around at the same time. But, you know, we're going to work our damnedest to bring the best in both media and creator guests for every show that we do.
What's your favorite part of the expo?
Well, you know, to be perfectly honest, I've always been a vendor at a show, and I've never really had that much of a chance to really go out and explore and do different things. But I've got to say that this year for the expo in particular, I'm really excited for the Torchwood guests to be there and for the Torchwood dinner. The Torchwood is like one of my all-time favorite TV shows, and you know, as a Doctor Who fan, and I think it stands alone great on its own. And the fact that we've got, you know, the three main characters from Torchwood, and there's a special dinner happening the Friday night, for me, that's the thing I'm the most excited about.
Nice. Yeah, I see that there's a lot more of the kind of satellite things taking place this year, like the Torchwood dinner, the Game of Thrones thing, the Weird Al concert, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. It just helps really round out the overall experience for our attendees, and it helps to give somebody something a little extra special if they can, you know, if they're big fans of something and they want to put out a few extra dollars, that gives them a more memorable experience. So,
now I'm interested because with the sellout in this case, now I know that Calgary doesn't have that many more venues that like how big can this get is kind of where I'm going.
Well, I mean, the thing is, you know, Calgary has maxed out the space of the biggest facility in town. So it's really a matter of sitting down and seeing if there are ways. You know, that's not something that I'm super privy to of their plans, but I know if they can, they will. The nice thing about Edmonton is that, you know, in our first year, we only took up one hall of the Expo Center of several halls. Coming into year two, we're taking three halls, and you know, we can get to the point where we can literally accommodate 100,000 people if need be in the Edmonton Expo Center. So Edmonton certainly has a lot of room for growth. Calgary, I know they'd like to grow, but it's just it's a matter of what they can and can't do, you know, around the city and in the area. So.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question, though. It's a very exciting time, and I think that it seems to be attracting more fans that wouldn't necessarily call themselves fans of the genre normally.
Yeah, that's, you know, I think what has happened, you know, and why the convention industry in particular is exploding as it has across North America is that the great thing about nerds in nerd culture is that the people who are really into it are unabashed about their love for it. You know, they embrace it. They're not shy about it. And so when, you know, people from, you know, what I say, like mainstream society see these pictures from conventions of everybody having so much fun and dressed in costumes and, you know, really letting their inhibitions go, I think that really attracts a lot more people to being like, you know, I kind of want to be a part of that. These guys are having a lot of fun. Maybe there's something to it. Just in the shop, I've noticed there are so many people coming through buying tickets who are first timers and like, what can I expect from this? And like, you can expect to have a great time. And that's really what it comes down to. It's just a weekend where you can forget your troubles at the door and immerse yourself in whatever property you're into, whether it's comic books or collectibles or sci-fi or fantasy or gaming. You can just let everything go and enjoy that for one weekend. And I think that really speaks volumes to a lot of people.
Now, as a tattoo store owner, how did you get involved earlier in the case of your Edmonton show?
Well, the thing is, I've been a collector of, you know, basically Star Wars memorabilia and comic books and screens recorders, G.I. Joe, for about 23 years now at this point. So it's something that I've always been passionate about. I've, you know, been a longtime fan of science fiction and Star Wars, and I got involved in the Star Wars community quite a few years ago by running a website called tattoosandtoys.com after I got my first Star Wars tattoo. And I kind of realized that there was a much larger Star Wars community that was interested in tattoos and tattooing. And through the website, it just sort of kind of exploded. And then I started doing tattoo-related events with Lucasfilm. I ended up publishing a book called The Force and the Flesh. And then at the same time, while running my show, the Edmonton Collectible Toy and Comic Show, I noticed a significant amount of heavily tattooed people who were involved in this community as well. So the inevitable step for me was to open up a shop that kind of embraced all of it. So we are a tattoo shop, we're a toy store, we're a comic book store, and we're also an art gallery. So it embraces everything that we, you know, it's almost like a mini expo for us every day in our shop.
Nice. That sounds like a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun, actually.
I'll ask you two more questions. Any last words as far as the Calgary Expo goes?
Well, we're just really looking forward to seeing everybody who comes out, and we really hope that everyone's going to have a fantastic time, because I know we are going to have a great time just in putting it on for everyone. So.
Yeah, I suppose, because you want to, there'll definitely be big steps taken, I guess, to avoid the unfortunate mishaps of last year.
Yeah, there have been significant plans that have been implemented in conjunction with the venue and the fire marshals and everything to ensure that that doesn't happen again. There's a lot more traffic flow and things have been moved to different areas to really accommodate the crowds that maybe accumulate in other areas over some different spots. So there's definitely plans to make sure that that does not happen again. So.
Nice. And then any scoops on the Edmonton Expo for us?
We're hoping to be able to make our first guest announcements at the Calgary Expo. But we're so kind of immersed in Calgary right now that as soon as that's over, we'll be going full tilt into Edmonton. So unfortunately, I have no news that I can leak to you.
do you have any social media you want to plug?
The Calgary Expo is on Twitter, on Facebook, so you can join those things. Again, for Edmonton Expo, we're also on Twitter and Facebook, and if you're interested in checking out what we do at Shades of Grey, you can visit us at shadesofgreytattoo.com, and like I said, we will be tattooing at the convention, so if you're interested in getting some nerdy tattoos while you're enjoying the Calgary Expo, come on over to our booth, just listen for the buzzing.
Great, thanks so much, Shane, I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.